In yesterday's program, we outlined the countries that have an overwhelming Islamic majority. And in those countries, when they are given the opportunity to go fight the ultimate great jihad, what they will view as the final battle prior to the day of judgment to ultimately destroy Israel and kill every Jew. In those countries where Islam represents an overwhelming percentage of the population, the majority of fighting age Muslim boys will engage. And the reason is because to not go in such a country is to die at the hands of the Muslims who will go. In the ninth surah of the Quran, Allah is quoted saying that if a Muslim does not support jihad, fighting in Allah's cause, that individual ceases to be a Muslim and becomes an apostate. The Quran's ninth surah calls a peaceful Muslim a hypocrite, which is why there cannot be a moderate Muslim. And then it tells jihadist Muslims to kill them, in fact, to savage them as an example to others. So in those Islamic countries where Islam is a majority, the majority of boys of fighting age will join the great jihad against Israel. Now, if just one third of them go, it will still be over 100 million Muslims that will come out of these majority Islamic countries. But we also have to consider the countries that have a significant percentage of Muslims, of countries where the Muslim population is a minority, but that minority is somewhere between 10 and 50%. There are 30 nations that fall under that criterion, and another 285 million Muslims reside in those nations. Now, it is interesting that how fast the number of Muslims fall off, that Muslims tend to congregate in countries where 90 to 100% of the population is Islamic. They just can't get along with anyone else. Can't get along with themselves either. But, you know, there are very few countries that have that are 50% Islamic, because they... moment that you reach that point, like what's happening in Nigeria now, the Islamic population massacres the non-Islamic population, which is what we're witnessing there. But there are 30 nations where Islam has a substantial minority. Another 285 million Muslims live there, and we will get some percentage of Muslims participating out of those countries. So while we're going to get 130 million minimum in the majority Islamic countries, in these large minority Islamic countries, we should expect a very small percentage of Muslims participating, because they aren't overwhelmed by fellow Muslim jihadists. But also, there are a lot of countries with a very small Islamic population, 2-3% of the population. There's still a lot of Muslims, and there's 33 un-Islamic nations from which some Mujahideen are going to participate. You know, countries like that are Argentina at 3% Islamic, Australia at 2%, Australia at 6%, Belgium at 6%, Burma, Brunei 2 to 4%, Canada's 3%, China is 2% Islamic. There will be Muslims from countries like this. You know, the United States is 1% Islamic. 2.5 million Muslims living in the United States. They're going to send something. I mean, there's American Muslims fighting jihad in Syria now, fighting jihad in Yemen. And so there will be some. But collectively, I would not expect that the 130 million who come from overwhelmingly preponderance Islamic nations to increase that number substantially. You know, so maybe a total of another 10 million Muslims will come from minority Islamic nations. But based upon this analysis, and this is important for us to do, because God has said that Muslims are going to come from many, many nations. And he's told us that they're going to flood into Israel as a multitude. And so it's worth us doing the analysis of the Islamic world right now to ascertain where they're going to come from, how many of them there's going to be. And the evidence suggests that there will be somewhere between 130 and 200 million mujahideen that are going to come from the 50 nations with a overwhelming Islamic majority. The 63 nations with a smaller percentage of Muslims may send 10 million more jihadists between them. This veritable sea of religious rage will flood into Israel from all directions. Multitudes will approach via the Caspian Sea, the Black Sea, and the Marmara Seas. Others will sail across the Mediterranean Sea. Many will traverse the Aegean. Armed hordes will roar across the Nile Delta and the Suez Canal. Some will circumnavigate the Arabian Peninsula via the Red Sea. Many more will flood into eastern Israel across the Jordan and the Dead Sea, as well as the Sea of Galilee. Like a swarm of locusts devouring everything in their path, screaming Allahu Akbar, in the land of Yahweh, the death brigade of Muslims will appear unstoppable. To be a Jew in Israel at this moment would be terrifying. Now, Yahweh deployed Hamon in this context to convey that these hordes of agitated terrorists who are confused and loudmouthed will roar into Israel, flaunting the weapons they possess. It is an appropriate depiction of today's Islamic jihadists. With anguished screams and snarling and growling, they will bring their unique Hama, societal chaos, to the one part of the Middle East they have not thus far been able to wholly corrupt. Militants will flood into Israel, eroding the promised land with successive and relentless waves. In Kabir, great numbers, and with grating passion, they, Sha'ah, will lay waste. It will be the greatest tsunami of terror the world has ever witnessed. In the 13th statement of the 17th chapter of Yeshayah, Isaiah, we read, "This massive number of people who gather together will be like the horrible chaos and riotous roar of floodwaters. Massively great, widespread, and abundant shall be their desire to destroy everything, giddy in the process as they crash into the land as a raging storm. But He, capital He, Yahweh, will rebuke them, issuing a strong warning against them while criticizing their corruption. And so they will be forced to flee, taking flight as a result of being driven back, ultimately ceasing to exist on account of being alienated. They will be chased, pursued, and driven away, similar to the chaff that dries and is discarded on the hills before the approaching presence of the Spirit. Like the chariot wheels of troop transports, rolling like tumbleweeds before the approaching presence of the storm." This assault will be comprised of Laom, multitudes of people, from Rabim Amim, a great many nations. I suspect it will be the most massive and the most misguided force ever assembled by humankind. Muslims, moronically believing that Allah is God and that He wants them to kill Jews for Him, will be confronted by Yahweh, who actually is God. After rebuking these Muslims, in essence affirming that they are ignorant, irrational, and immoral, He will deploy His spirits to blow them away. It will be fatal to Islamic aspirations. On the positive side, the most deadly, destructive, and demonic plague the world has ever known will be eradicated. By saying that he is going to garar, rebuke them, criticizing their corruption, God is shattering a common religious misconception. Muslims bristle and often strike when their religion is criticized. They, like most Christians, falsely believe that religion is godly, divinely inspired, and beyond reproach. Even if the evidence wielded against their belief system is indisputable, even if the citations brought to bear against their faith are derived exclusively from their most trusted scriptural sources, even if the rationale is irrefutable, the religious universally slander the messenger as being disrespectful, hateful, and demonic. And yet, since God is doing this very thing at this moment, the religious universally despise the very thing that God himself will be doing. It is further proof that religious gods are the antithesis of the real one. And understand this. Religions claim that it is inappropriate to criticize them. And yet, since God himself is going to be rebuking them, it shows once again that religions are in opposition to God. While it will be too late for these wannabe killers, Yahweh's rebuke will benefit others. Those with an open mind, those who remain receptive to listening to what God has to say to these religious assailants, may turn to Yahweh and to his Torah for answers. His covenant may suddenly seem appealing, the most reasonable and beneficial option available to anyone at this time. Now, the scene is vividly described by Yahweh. The Muslims who have sought to kill his children and to confiscate his land nuke. They will retreat, taking flight as they are forced to flee. For having men murkak, been in opposition to God. The jihadists radaf will be pursued and they will be driven away. And we will consider how they will be discarded when we return. Yahweh is telling us that the Islamic jihadists, radaf, will be pursued and driven away like motes, dead and discarded chaff. And while Yahweh will not be visible at this time, the approach of his ruach, his set-apart spirit, will be sufficient to cause tanks and troop transports to appear as if they were tumbleweeds. And while that's bad news for Islam, for the rest of the world, there is an approaching storm, a war more deadly and universal than the one Yahweh just ended. But more on this in a moment. This is the 14th statement of Yeshayah, Isaiah 17. Approaching the point in time of the darkness of the Arab sunset, then behold, terrorism. The deliberate and dreadful mauling and murder of civilians to promote a political and religious objective. And the time before the dawn, it is over, and for naught. This is the fate of those deceived regarding their merits. The result of a flattering propaganda. The reward for those coveting booty who engage in a military conquest to plunder and pillage us. And the lot in recompense. The retribution coming to those who seek to conquer us, carrying off the spoils of war. It is interesting here that Yahweh switches from third person. He, speaking of himself in third person, he will blow them away as he's telling us the role that his spirit's going to have in ending this Islamic assault. Literally blowing the Muslims out of his land and out of existence. He now moves to us, speaking of Yisrael that he has protected as part of a collective whole. quite telling. But he's also saying that along with this Arab sunset, so he's not calling it the Arab Spring. Yahweh is explaining that what we are witnessing is actually the Arab sunset. He said that with it, it ushers in terrorism, the deliberate and dreadful mauling and murder of civilians to promote a political and religious objective. The Hebrew term to convey what Yahweh is saying is the derivative of the Arab sunset is Ba'aha. It is Ba'Allah, and Ba'Allah means in Allah. If you just want to transliterate it, it's in Allah. Ba is the Hebrew word for in. It is used as a contraction. It's used, it's prepositions are part of words in Hebrew, so that they're a contraction. For example, Ba Rishith is the first word in the Torah. And Ba means in, so it speaks of in the beginning. Well, this would be in the name of Allah. The Hebrew word for terrorism, for the deliberate and dreadful mauling and murder of civilians to promote a political and religious objective, transliterated, is literally in Allah. And God is speaking of that being the result of the Arab sunset. My. I mean, I don't know how more bluntly, boldly, effectively, Yahweh can communicate what the world is witnessing, what the world will soon experience, than he is doing. It's amazing that so many people choose not to listen to him, not to care what he has to say when he speaks of an Arab sunset and it bringing forth terrorism in the name of Allah. But God is saying that before the dawn, it will be all over, and it will be for naught. They will fail. And they're going to fail because he intervenes to blow them away. And then God says, I'm going to hold them accountable. This is the fate of those who are deceived regarding their merits. Every Islamic terrorist is deceived regarding his merits. Every Islamic terrorist has been made that by flattering propaganda. The heart of the Quran speaks of plunder and pillaging being lawful and good. Muhammad conceived Islam based upon plunder and pillage. God is saying, you know, your Quran may say that stealing and booty is lawful and good, but my Torah says you ought not steal. And I'm going to tell you that since I'm God, the consequence of you believing a demonic book that told you that you ought to conquer us and loot us is upon you. It's an amazing statement, approaching the point in time of the darkness of the Arab sunset. Then behold, there will be terrorism, deliberate and dreadful mauling and murder of civilians to promote a political and religious objective in the name of Allah, Ba'Allah. In the time before the dawn, it will be over, and for naught. This is the fate of those deceived regarding their merits, the result of their flattering propaganda, the reward for those coveting booty, who engaged in a military conquest to plunder and pillage us, and the lot and retribution coming to those who seek to conquer us, carrying off the spoils of war. Islam has been so dreadful and destructive, so deadly and debilitating, so overtly satanic. Yahweh devotes the closing paragraph of this remarkable chapter just to denounce the religion. During a period when ill-informed journalists are referring to a Holocaust of violence exploding around the Muslim world as the Arab Spring, Yahweh correctly identifies this time as the darkness of the Arab sunset. God even acknowledges the religion's signature act, Ba'Allah, terrorism in Allah's name. The deliberate and dreadful mauling and murder of civilians to promote a political and religious objective. Islam and terrorism have become indistinguishable. fundamentalist Muslims commit over 99% of the world's acts of terrorism. But it will be for naught, just as it has been the entire 1,400-year history of Islam. Muslims will continue to destroy everything they touch, including themselves, but only for a time. Those who have been deceived, devouring the religious propaganda, believing their wannabe prophet and God, when they declared in the 8th surah of the Quran, suitably named the Spoils of War, that booty was lawful and good, well, they're going to find otherwise. Coveting pillage and plunder, they will discover that these things will cost them their souls. The would-be conquerors will be vanquished. The horrid history of this destructive and deadly religion will come to a fitting conclusion, with God himself annihilating the most reverent religious hosts. The fate of those who have been deceived regarding their merits will be to be considered worthless. The destiny of those influenced by self-aggrandizing propaganda will be to be silenced. The fitting recompense for those who have been beguiled into believing that confiscating booty through military conquest is authorized by God is to be defeated and disinherited by God. Those who sought paradise and the spoils of war will vanish, their souls either ceasing to exist or forever incarcerated. The Magog War is now over. Islam is defeated by Yahweh. The storm is now on the horizon, and that should be of grave concern to the nation described in the 18th chapter of Yeshayah, America. The United States is thoroughly depicted in unflattering and irrefutable terms. And while we aren't told why America makes its prophetic debut at this point, it's clearly not good. In the context of the prophecy and current world history, we know that the United States is the reason Damascus will be destroyed and Syria will fall. The proxy war that has ravaged throughout the region is a direct result of America's foolish and counterproductive invasion of Iraq, in effect giving Iraq to Iran. The influence of Iran and Shia Islam surged, threatening the surrounding Sunni fiefdoms. In response, they recruited Islamic jihadists and transferred U.S. weapons, igniting a catastrophic proxy war in Syria. Ultimately, the Sunni Mujahideen will prevail. They outnumber Shia Muslims 4-1, and the 46 majority Islamic nations outspend the 4 Shia countries 10-1, $155 billion to $15 billion. But bringing down the Assad regime will only serve to exasperate the world's problem. It will get worse from there, because there will be terrorism in Allah's name. The victorious Sunni jihadists will return to the nations from which they have come, and a reign of terror will commence around the world. Moreover, the Mujahideen who remain in Syria will be unrestrained, turning their religious rage against Israel. Not only has the United States sold over $100 billion of deadly weaponry to the Sunni Islamic countries that supported the rebels, supplying 25 times more military hardware to Israel's foes than to the Israelis themselves, the United States has built entire armies for the Iraqis and Afghanis, the Egyptians and Pakistanis. The flame of war has been kindled, and the United States has been caught supplying the fuel and holding the match, just as it is today in the Ukraine. And if that were not enough to earn Yahweh's wrath at this critical juncture in history, America has taken the lead in brokering an irrational peace treaty that will cost Israel dearly, forcing the nation to surrender land to the Muslims who continue to seek the obliteration of the Promised Land. seizing upon the opportunity while wielding weapons supplied by the United States, Islamic militants by the tens of millions will pour into the promised land, and while they will fail, with Yahweh's spirit blowing them away, that is just the calm before the storm. The 18th chapter of Yeshayah, Isaiah, opens with this expression. Woe, expressing dissatisfaction and a warning. Oi, to the land, the Eretz of whirling and buzzing wings, which is from the region beyond, situated on the opposite side of the direction of the rivers of Cush, which is either the Nile Delta or northern Mesopotamia, or more likely, both. In the midst of this chronology of events, Yahweh's Oi expresses his overt dissatisfaction towards the United States. American belligerence and malfeasance may become intolerable, reaching a destructive and deadly crescendo. Reading between the lines, I suspect that American politicians and generals will be miffed that their weapons will be rebuffed in Israel so easily. With an unrealistic estimate of the nation's worth, America's leadership will be unwilling to admit that they were trumped by gods. Still clinging to the notion of American exceptionalism, the U.S. fleet will sail off to war. America and Europe will face off against Russia and China, and with the United States projecting a far greater force than all of the other nations combined, it will still lose. And unlike its previous failures, this will be its last. It is also possible, even likely, that the Oi warning was deployed as a warning specifically alerting Americans that they will endure the worst the impending tribulation has to offer. It will be a horrible time for all mankind, but based upon this admonition, especially for those living in the United States. And since it wasn't in Yahweh's nature to torment people, no matter how repulsive they may have become, other causes, some suggested by current events and some depicted in prophecy, will transpire. On the human side, just as the Nazis bombed Britain after Chamberlain's foolish attempt to appease them, we should expect Muslims to ravage America after its failed attempt to stem Islamic terrorism by awarding the perpetrators the preponderance of Israel. This escalation of jihadi ambitions was predicted in Yahusha's Olivet Discourse as he described the birth pangs associated with the last days. Economically, it's only a matter of time before the United States implodes under the massive burden of its accumulated debt. The welfare entitlement state is not sustainable, nor is the nation's massive military expenditures. There will come a time within the next 15 years that America's debt will become unserviceable, bankrupting the nation and resulting in anarchy. The dollar will become worthless and all debts, public and private, will be forgiven as a ploy to coax desperate individuals into relying on a new leader, a new plan, a new electronic currency manipulated by a great deceiver. World War is also on America's horizon. Obama nearly fired the opening salvo when he wanted to bomb Damascus, sending cruise missiles and bombers over the protective Russian fleet. The prophet speaks of the elements melting under intense heat and resulting obscuration of the atmosphere, perhaps a reference to nuclear holocaust. A third of the earth will be scorched and become uninhabitable, with North America likely included in the devastation. This war of a nation rising against nations was also mentioned by Yahusha as he describes the calamitous events that take place before his return. What's more, according to Yahusha, Apophis, the near-Earth asteroid designated 2004 MN is predicted to very narrowly miss the Earth on Friday, April 13th, 2029, right in the midst of the tribulation, at its exact halfway point. But according to Yaush, it's going to collide, impacting the planet. NASA is so concerned about this eventuality, it is investing billions trying to devise a means to more accurately track this asteroid during its elongated orbit, and then to deflect it as it approaches Earth. Simultaneously, and according to Yaush's prediction, this impact will cause the land that is currently slipping on the slopes of one or both volcanoes, Cumbre Vieja, or on La Palma, in the western end of the Canary Islands off the coast of Spain, or Kilauea, on the eastern edge of the big island of Hawaii, to give way, generating tsunamis of unimaginable scale, both impacting the United States, but on opposite sides. Another, albeit related, tribulation birth pang that will grow in frequency and magnitude before Yaush's return is Megas Seismos, which are earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, all of which frequent the United States. Life will become untenable. God is saying, yes, we are going to have climate change. But even beyond experiencing the most horrendous terrorist attacks in history, beyond the total collapse and resulting anarchy, beyond nuclear war and nuclear winter, beyond asteroid strikes and landslides that propel mountainous tsunamis, beyond the impending assault of 8.0 magnitude earthquakes, F5 tornadoes, and Category 5 hurricanes, America is being admonished for the ultimate crime, harassing God's chosen people. Based upon the conclusion of the 18th chapter of Yeshayah, it's apparent that to save a remnant of his children, Yah was going to have to rescue them from America. One of God's earliest warnings is directed at those who would curse the heirs to the covenant. The inference here is that Americans have brought many of these calamities upon themselves by being belligerent and antagonistic. God says that the U.S. is the Eretz, the land of whirling and buzzing wings, an obvious reference to the nation's Air Force, and in particular, its attack helicopters and drones. They, along with the birds of prey that he will speak of later in this prophecy, have become synonymous with America's destructive prowess. Yahweh even locates the United States, revealing that it is Men Eber, is situated on the opposite side of the world from the perspective of his prophet, from the region beyond the Nahari rivers of Cush. Cush, as Noah's grandson, was born in eastern Turkey, but in accord with the Torah's accounting, and affirmed by the mountain range which bears his name, spent much of his life in northern Mesopotamia. Using this region as reference, draw a line from Jerusalem through it, and you'll find that it intersects Alaska on the far side of the world. But since the writings and prophets also depict Cush in proximity to Egypt in the Nile Delta, as a result of the migration of the descendants of this man whose name means black, the rivers of the black land, the rivers of Cush, would also depict the Nile Delta. This realization is further reinforced by the fact that Mitzrayim, as I've mentioned, was known as the Black Land to the Egyptians as a result of the rich sediment deposited annually by the flooding of the Nile. And a line drawn from Jerusalem through the Nile Delta intersects the Florida Keys, the southern tip of Texas and of Hawaii. If one were to draw a line straight across the Mediterranean Sea from Israel through the Straits of Gibraltar, such a line intersects, making landfall between Washington, D.C. and New York City. Speaking of this nation, God said it dispatches envoys by way of the sea. And so in floating vessels on the surface of the waters, the messengers travel swiftly, indulgently, and morally, without any regard for the consequence of their mission. The United States of America has built 12 enormous battle groups around its fleet of massive aircraft carriers. Two additional floating behemoths are currently under construction. This capacity to project a force, Ba Kele Gome, and floating vessels on the Panay Mayhem surface of the waters is unparalleled in human history. It is in this way that America's Malak, messengers and envoys travel, call swiftly and indulgently on missions. Presidents have declared and are in the, are in the country's national interests. While their reasoning is dubious at best, the globe has actually become America's playground, and we are kicking sand in everyone's face. Since there isn't another nation with a single vessel, much less a third of the capacity and capability of a Nimitz-class carrier, since the U.S. Navy boasts more aircraft carriers than the rest of the world combined, and since they are by far the most effective way to send a message that won't be missed, there may be no better way than this to distinguish the United States from other nations. Also, as if striving to comply with the prediction, the U.S. Secretary of Defense announced early this year that he would substantially reduce Army troop strength so that he could build more ships capable of projecting an American naval superiority across the seas. We'll rejoin with you at this time tomorrow.